Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Does money drive you crazy? Be honest. I know it drives everybody crazy at some point or another. Unless you're living in a monastery, you are affected by money, and I imagine they are as well. So it drives us crazy, and I do my darndest to try to help people plan their financial future. But it is part of our life. So if it drives you crazy, you'll be very interested to hear what my next guest has to say. Dr. Aaron Kipnis, PhD, and a long list of education and accomplishments. He's written the book, The Midas Complex, How Money Drives Us Crazy and What We Can Do About It. We're going to talk about the book, but there's so much I want to talk to Dr. Kipnis about. So let me welcome to the program. Dr. Kipnis, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be with you today.
I'm delighted you're with us, and the good doctor said I can call him Aaron, so I'll do that. Aaron, I want to ask you the obvious question, and this is what you have. You're a psychologist, you're an author, you are a frequent speaker, you have bachelor's degree in psychology, master's degree in psychology, PhD clinical psychology, and you have done a lot of work in this area. So why does money drive us crazy?
Well, I think one of the reasons is because it means so many different things to many different people. You know, one part of money is very simple, the arithmetic part. We can count it, we all agree. I mean, $20 bill, it's American cash, it'll buy so many lattes or, you know, two movie tickets or a shirt. But that's the easy part of money. The hard part of money is, what does it mean to you? Is it freedom? Does it mean happiness? Does it mean if you have more, you'll be more attractive? The more money means the things that we're really longing for in our life, the qualities of life that can make us happy, the more it substitutes for those things, the more trouble people are generally in emotionally and psychologically.
There's an old Yiddish proverb that says, with money in your pocket, you're handsome, you're funny, and you sing well too.
Yeah, there's another. Thank you. I love that one. That's really, I hadn't heard that before. That's really great. There's another Yiddish expression that says, poverty is no disgrace, but no honor either.
Ah. So it is a, and I've always tried to find the right term, and you probably can give it to me. I've always tried to find the right word for money. It's a get something. It's a translation. It's a form of currency. I mean, it's a way of getting these things, transferring and getting an exchange of a product or service or an experience or and even buying time somewhere. It, as you said, it means so many different things for people.
Right. Well, money is quite magical in that way. To use an academic word, we would call it protean. Protean is like a stem cell. Stem cells, the reason they're excited about that in science right now is they can become anything else. You can turn a stem cell into a liver cell or a heart cell and make new organs. Well, money can instantly be transformed into anything else. And that makes it kind of a magical substance. So it can be quite wonderful, and it can bring a lot of joy and fulfillment to our lives. But it can also behave somewhat like a drug for certain people. If a little bit makes me happy, a whole lot more will make me a whole lot happier. But that formula doesn't really work.
No, and imagine like a drug that it starts to having a declining incremental benefit the more you get.
Exactly, and you know, I was very surprised in doing research for this book when I started looking on the links between happiness and money. Because I think most of us as Americans, we believe that, well, there's that old thing, you can never be too rich. And we have that opportunity here, so it's right before us. But there's a point on the economic scale where the relationship with happiness and money tends to taper off. If you're poor, having more money makes you happier because it brings better health care, mm-hmm. better housing, better food, you know, a running car and so forth. But once you start to get into the ranks of the middle class and the upper middle class, you might enjoy the increase of income and the things that it can bring, but it doesn't actually produce overall more happiness.
Interesting.
And that tops out for people somewhere between around $75,000 a year, and on the coast, that's more like $130,000, like in New York or in Los Angeles.
Right, right.
But that's still in the ranks of the middle to upper middle class. After that, it doesn't produce more happiness.
Interesting.
What it does is it tends to produce a lot more clutter in our lives. It takes more time to manage that bigger job, to manage that second home, to manage that third car, to, you know, the things that more money can buy. So having a more interesting or exciting job, like we both have, that creates more happiness. Having better relationships with our spouses and our children, our other loved ones, that produces more happiness. Having more friendships, a meaningful existence, health, improving our physical health, that produces happiness. But at some point, making more money doesn't.
Well, there you are. Aaron Kipnis is our guest today, PhD, psychologist, author, speaker. We're going to come back from the break and talk about exactly what the Midas Complex is and delve more deeply into his work. So stay right there.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back. Aaron Kipnis, PhD. And he has written the book, The Midas Complex, How Money Drives Us Crazy and What We Can Do About It. And the website, a lot of good stuff there, aaronkipnis.com, K-I-P-N-I-S. That's how you spell Kipnis, aaronkipnis.com. Aaron, what exactly then is the Midas Complex all about?
I think most of us heard that old fairy tale about King Midas, who was a wealthy king in ancient Greece who did a kindness for one of their gods, and the god granted him a boon. And he was already the wealthiest guy in the neighborhood, but he really liked gold. So he said, well, grant me that power. We've heard that
term,
Midas touch. And the god said, look, Midas, you know, you're such a good king. Ask me for something else. That's really not the best thing you could ask for. But Midas said, no, that's what I want.
Mm.
He said, all right. And so Midas went out to his garden. He was an avid gardener, and he touched his beautiful roses, and they turned into gold. And that was quite fascinating to him. He called his servants together and had a big feast to celebrate his gift. They loaded the table with bread and wine, and he touched the loaves. Well, they turned golden, and he couldn't eat them. Then he went to pick up his wine because he was thirsty, but it turned to molten gold as it went down his throat, choking. And just then his daughter came running into the banquet hall, and he reached out to give her a hug and turned her into a statue. He tried to ride away from it all in his chariot, but it turned into gold when he touched it, so the horses couldn't even pull it. And then he realized that his gift had become a curse.
Mm-mm-mm.
So I'm calling this a complex, a certain kind of condition that some of us get caught into, in that belief that more is always better, and where we start sacrificing the beauty of our garden, our relationships with one another, with our children, with our physical health, our overall happiness and well-being in life, in the pursuit of more and more numbers etched into an account. This is actually a pervasive problem in our culture right now.
Well, and that was going to be my question, because it's a cultural thing, right? I mean, that's what we're being bombarded with on a daily basis, is more, 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 more. by the advertising, by the multimedia images of, you know, however many thousands of images we get a day, or whatever it is. And, and I guess the question then is, how do we combat that?
Well, the first step is having the kind of conversation that you and I are having is challenging that fantasy that more is always better and looking at what really does make us happy. One of the things, we're one of the most wealthy nations on the planet. We're proud of that, and it's something we should be proud of. But we're also one of the most high impoverished cultures on the planet. And this is in surveys of happiness, what Americans complain about the most. They don't have time to be with the people that they love, to do the things that they enjoy doing. So at some point, when we're sacrificing time for money, and I'm talking about beyond that level when we're really struggling and we're trying to come up from poverty.
Right.
Of course, we make a lot of sacrifices. We have to do that to save our family. But then at some point, we keep doing that. We begin to injure our lives and diminish our quality of life. And, you know, over the in recent years, a lot of people have stopped believing in the American dream because there's been so much greed at the top and so little generosity and help and encouragement for people at the bottom, access to education, access to job training, access to small business starting, that we're seeing a huge divide between the haves and the have-nots, worse than it's ever been in American history.
Well, that's one of the things I know that you've spoken about and you've written about is the and I've got to ask because it's so provocative, the problem of psychopaths thriving as I think you described it in some of our major financial institutions. How do they get there? How do they stay there? What? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, Robert Hare is one of the big writers about psychopathy. He wrote a book called Without Conscience. And that's very cogent. That defines a kind of character that only thinks about themselves, what they want, and is not really interested in the welfare of others. They see others there to serve them. So when psychopaths are born into the lower socioeconomic sector, when they're poor, they don't have much access to other people. They might become criminals and hurt a few people and wind up in prison. But when they're born into families that have great access to higher education and wealth, they can wind up, you know, front and central in some of our biggest economic and political institutions.
Mm.
And maybe even get rewarded for that kind of behavior, for being really ruthless.
Right.
And caring only about the bottom line of the company. And I think that's been for whatever reasons, that seems to be growing in our culture as our schools are not concentrating as much on citizenry and ethics, as companies are not vetting their young executives more around their moral gravity, their moral center, as much as their capacity to just make more money at any cost. Like this new movie with DiCaprio, The Wolf on Wall Street.
Right. Well, it sounds almost like
that kind of person.
Yeah, it sounds like almost the title of a book, The Rise of the American Psychopath, Corporate America.
To some degree, of course, there are a lot of corporations who are have a different character, who are very concerned about something we would call the triple bottom line. Not just how much money they make, that's the first bottom line. The second bottom line is people. How is our company treating the people that work for it? And the vendors and everyone else that interacts with it. We're a community. We're trying to keep our community whole and healthy. And the third bottom line is, how's our company affecting the planet? So they call it triple P, profit, people, and planet. Hmm. And there are a lot of big companies now that are embracing this ideal and saying we have a corporate responsibility to make money, yes, for our stockholders, but also to do it in a way that increases the well-being of our workers and our customers, and also contributes to the well-being of the environment that we're taking more from than we're giving back to, which is a problem for everyone on the planet. And you can see that as a kind of global Midas complex.
Sure.
We're turning our rivers and our forests, the air that we breathe, and even our weather, that just like King Midas converted the wealth of his garden to gold, we're converting the Earth's resources to things. And a lot of them are things that we don't really need. We don't need them as much as we need clean air.
That's
we don't need them as much as
that's
we need,
fair. That's very,
you know,
fair.
Water.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Aaron Kipnis is our guest and giving us some insight into his book, The Midas Complex, How Money Drives Us Crazy and What We Can Do About It. Quick break, come back. I want to talk about money and relationships. Can't avoid that one. Key question. Stay right there.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Dr. Aaron Kipnis, he's on the line with us, and I'm going to ask him the really key question I wanted to make sure we got to on the program. And money conflicts are one of the top, if not the top, reason for couples getting divorced. And yeah. So the big question is, how can couples and families better manage a relationship with money?
Yeah, you know, it was a surprising thing I learned in doing research for this book. Couples argue about other things more, how to raise children, distribution of labor, who's going to do the dishes, that kind of thing. But the number one reason that they divorce is over some concern around money, some disagreement around how they make it, how they spend it, what they're going to do with it. And yet, you know, therapists around the country aren't even given a single hour-long seminar in how to talk to their client about money. It's, you know, it's in the shadow. We're afraid to talk about it, or just don't know how to talk about it.
Taboo.
So that's the answer. The answer is to talk about it. Is, you know, the Masters and Johnson let America talk about sex. They came out and said, you know, sex is pretty interesting. Why are we afraid to talk about it? We'd have better sex lives if we talked about them, and you know, and that did a lot for us in our relationships. And I suggest the same thing about money. Everything should be on the table. Most couples are afraid to talk about it. Somewhere around 10 to 30% of couples have credit cards that the other partner doesn't know about, or bank account.
That's a high percentage.
Or other kind of secret spending. Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. So having financial secrets is it's a different kind of affair, right? It's almost like having a relationship with someone else that you don't tell your partner about. It can be very coercive. So I believe in, you know, kind of microscopic honesty, even when it hurts, when you have to come home and say, honey, I lost a bundle in the stock market, or whatever, I bought something foolish, or I lost my job, or, you know, whatever, we can't really afford this house anymore. And to lean on one another and really be microscopically truthful and open, and have financial planning, not just between couples, but generations too.
Yeah.
The kids understand the whole thing about inheritance, who's getting what and why.
Well, that was going to be my question about inheritance, because, you know, they could either be a blessing, but I imagine that they, and I've seen this, and I guess that's part of what you can speak to, is I've seen it firsthand, is inheritances can be great for families, but it also can create real problems.
They create real problems when people are afraid to really trust everyone in the family and deal with with jealousy and senses of entitlement and concerns about who should get what, or to even talk about that. So having good financial planning is more than just having great instruments, you know, great documents and a will and, you know, a good financial plan. It's also having all the stakeholders involved and informed and well-educated and participating in the dialogue about how the family resources are going to be used. Doesn't mean everybody necessarily has an equal vote, but at least they're part of the conversation, and the conversation is in the open.
Yeah, they don't even have to all agree. They just it needs to be part of the conversation.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And I've worked with a lot of very affluent families where there was a tremendous amount of bitterness and division over the issues of inheritance, when in actuality everybody was going to be fine. there was enough pie for everyone to eat quite well, and the squabbling was needless because they weren't really hosting it in a way where all the stakeholders felt they had a voice.
So they were all getting plenty of pie and ice cream, but somebody was counting ice cream scoops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and I think the one last part of this, kind of in the same vein, is that with money's role in children's lives, I think you've said, you know, either too much or too little can be very damaging.
Yeah. You know, I work in my clinical practices in Santa Monica, and I teach in Santa Barbara at a place called Pacifica Graduate Institute. So we have a lot of very entitled people in our lives, a lot of very affluent families and children. And, of course, any of us who have a lot to share, we want to share it with our children, especially
sure.
those of us who didn't have much when we came up.
Exactly.
but we can give them too much, and that gets to be a tremendous problem when children don't grow up with a good sense of what it takes to make money and the real worth of things. So it's important not to give them too much.
Absolutely.
Even if we have the means, and to have them earn it in certain ways by doing some kind of work.
And that requires discipline. That's not discipline for the child. That's discipline for the parents.
Yeah, giving money. You know, if you have it, giving money is the easiest thing. Giving time, you know, taking time away from your Midas preoccupations and spending it with your children, that's much more of a sacrifice. And it's much more meaningful to them. It's what they're going to remember us for. Not the iPad, not because they got an iPhone when they were 12.
It's the time.
Yeah, that'll make them happy for, you know, a few days, maybe even a few months. But the time that we spend with them will enrich them, their entire lives and their children's lives, too.
Aaron Kipnis is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's a psychologist, author, speaker, PhD, smart guy, and he knows about the Midas Complex, how the money drives us crazy and what we can do about it. That's the book. Aaron Kipnis is the website, aaronkipnis.com. Quick break, right back.
Did you know living longer could be the death of your retirement? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, babies born today can expect to live until an average age of 78. Whether you're retiring today, tomorrow, or in 20 years, you must ask yourself, will your retirement plan go the distance? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Welcome back. Dr. Aaron Kipnis is our guest today, and the website is aaronkipnis.com. The Midas Complex, How Money Drives Us Crazy and What We Can Do About It is the book. One more thing I want to get to, Aaron, is, you know, the recent downturn in the U.S. markets, of course, is, you know, even 2008 is still very fresh and vivid, I think, in people's minds. And of course, with the market running up and then becoming more volatile, you know, that weighs on people. And so I wanted to ask you what your perspective is on that and how maybe that has affected our that along with the frauds that have been committed, which, you know, is another whole issue. How has that affected our whole, you know, our society, our national mental health, if you will?
Oh, I think that's a pretty good question. What we're seeing as psychotherapists is over the last 5 years is a pretty significant uptick in depression and anxiety, and particularly related to financial concerns. A lot of people have lost their home, or their businesses. And in America, that's losing a big part of the American dream.
Absolutely.
PEW, Pew, is an organization that does, you know, huge, robust surveys of lots of, you know, thousands and thousands of people. And they found that the majority of Americans no longer believe in the American dream, that they think that they may never own a home, that they'll never become upwardly mobile, that they're stuck where they are. And I think that's a real shift in the landscape of a large swath of middle and lower middle class and working class Americans. We used to believe that story of Horatio Alger from the 19th century, that anybody with, you know, who worked hard and saved, was frugal, had integrity, could get ahead. And certainly it's true that some of us can, but what we've learned now, only about 1 in 100 people is actually going to be able to migrate from the bottom to the top of the economy. And I don't think those are very good odds. I think the odds should be much better in America. And the way that we increase those odds is by giving people really good support to gain education, skills training, access to the means to prosper, instead of gathering all of the resources into the hands of increasingly few people and leaving very little left for the good, hardworking people of America who are trying to get ahead. That's a shift in our culture towards the kind of selfishness of a few and a disillusionment of the many. Historically, nations who have taken this turn have not done well.
Yeah, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. So I don't know how we're going to turn it around, but, you know, we can't just rely on our governmental leaders.
Thank you.
We can try to influence them, but I think we need to reach out to one another as neighbors, friends, families, and talk about these things openly and form areas of cooperation around resources to help one another, much the way the pioneers did, you know, over 100 years ago, with community farms and community schools and really trying to help one another have a better life.
Well,
it's about making more money.
Excellent. I'm going to have to stop right there. I'd love to continue. Dr. Aaron Kipnis is our guest today, psychologist, author, speaker, aaronkipnis.com. The Midas Complex, How Money Drives Us Crazy and What We Can Do About It's the book. Dr. Kipnis, thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you, David. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.